Welcome back to Don't Go to Book Club. My name is Luke.
The name's Dan.
I went a little off rhythm there. I said welcome, and then I was like, what do I normally say? So we are done with The Black Tongue Thief today.
Mm-hmm.
I need to get us warmed up because I'm for some reason rattled right now.
Yeah, Luke, get us on our rhythm. Get us back on our rhythm.
I'll try to get it back. I mentioned this a while ago as a potential future warm-up, and I'm going to do it today. The question, Dan, is what are we using front yards for? Now, let me acknowledge that this is somewhat related to a warm-up that we've done in the past, in the distant past, which was our preference for the courtyard system.
Oh, yeah. I almost forgot about the courtyard system.
I love the courtyard system. But I want to ask you, because I walk around my neighborhood a lot, as I talked about a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
And there's these very nice front yards, and they look great. And I like that as a walker. But they're like, you can't use them.
Say more.
Because, like, they're basically they're an aesthetic thing, right? Because like no one is out here like barbecuing in the front yard, except for your friend.
Yes, correct.
No one is out here really like doing much in their front yard except for gardening or like working on it.
Okay. Yes, I think this is a part of it, but Luke, I mean, we need to add a little exception here because there are some people who have corner lots who the whole yard is a front yard.
Yes, this is true.
And I think that these folks do end up using it for sort of like normal yard activities.
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
NYAs, if you will.
Yes, yes, NYAs. I mean, this might be a hot take. I'm kind of anti-lawn. This actually might not be that hot of a take. I think this is a fairly standard millennial take, actually, now that I think about it. But lawn feels like boomer coded to me.
And to be clear, you're talking about lawn as just like a patch of grass.
Correct. Okay. Especially considering that like peak for me is to live nearby a park because like I can just go to my local park. Where they have the grass, they cut the grass. There's a barbecue already set up there. It's not super busy. I like see my neighbors there. It's like way bigger than any yard I would ever have. Great. The property around my house feels like monoculture grass is not the move. Feels like you get some like local flora growing in there. You make a little pollinator zone.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I think when I think about the yards in my neighborhood, the front yards in my neighborhood, the ones that are, I think, doing it correctly are not the ones with grass.
Sure. Okay. Well, let me clarify because I agree with you. I maybe shouldn't say lawns.
Okay.
Because like the patch of land between the house and like the street/sidewalk.
Yes.
I struggle to like figure out the correct thing to do with it beyond. And so like I think the point that I would make is that like we should be at the curb with our houses.
You're talking about a townhouse is what you're asking for.
Yeah. I don't want any, I want to maximize backyard space. And my front yard, the front of my house is just like right, boom, there it is.
I don't know. I do kind of like a little bit of space. I like a little yard. We're going to use the word yard from now on because I think we've clarified our definition now. I like a little front yard space because I feel like it gives you a little walking introduction to the house.
Ooh.
Right? It's a little like, oh, these people are into like, I don't know, flowers and look at this sign they have out front and like.
Okay.
I don't know. I feel like it gives a little sneak peek of what
you're a big proponent of the aesthetic option.
100%. And this is where I was sort of going earlier, is the grass is so low effort that I'm like, you're boring. I don't do something different with this patch, because you're not playing in this, you know, 10 square foot patch of grass that is just outside your house. Make it decorative. Put a weird ass statue out here or something. I don't know. Give it some character. But grass, if you're doing grass, it's like, one, you have to like maintain it in the front where you're never using it. It's literally just like green in front of your house, like everybody else's.
Mm-hmm.
And two, it's like not, I don't know. It's, I don't think it's that cool looking. I think grass is great, nice, very green. Love it, green. Not very interesting to look at.
Yeah, I agree with you. You're only doing grass if you're going to be like playing or doing something like where you need open space. But no one uses, again, no one uses the front yard for this.
Correct. Correct. Now, this is also indicative on like living in a place where you get a lot of water. Luke, living in Arizona, I imagine a little like drought tolerant space in the front is a good
one. Yeah. We love a little rock/gravel and then some like desert landscaping.
Right, like a couple cacti or succulents or whatever.
That's right. Love that, actually. It's very
mm-hmm.
nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little mesquite tree. Doesn't take a ton of water. Cools the yard down a little bit.
Right, right. Essential stuff. So I feel like that's the idea of a front yard to me, at least. Now, it's a good thing, Luke, we're never going to have to worry about this, considering that we are millennials, as I've mentioned, and, you know,
yeah,
we're not going to have a yard. Come on.
Right. But, which I love, which I'm glad. I don't want one. You know what?
It seems like too much responsibility. I don't think I'm ready for that kind of a commitment. So.
The other thing, though, is that, like, I want a little bit of privacy. And so
Luke wants a backyard.
And so, well, like, but I also want windows in my house.
Luke, there's this amazing invention. They're called shutters or blinds for the inside.
But then you got to open and close them.
Okay.
It's a mess.
Luke,
it's a whole, it's a mess.
Luke, I have a better question. I have a better angle for us to go to. I have seen houses where the backyards have no fences.
Okay.
It's a big backyard. It's essentially like one big backyard where there's like 10 houses in a row and the backyard, and then like there's houses on the other side, and then the backyard is like shared with all the houses back.
Ooh.
There. What are your thoughts on that?
I think in theory I'm pro.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is it takes, you got to have like community.
This is also what I worry about, is I like the idea. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Cause then you can sort of have a big space. You can set up like a temporary soccer field back there and like have a big cookout. But also if your neighbors are horrible, it kind of ruins it, which is, man. That kind
Listen,
of ruins
what
a
we
lot
need
of
to do.
Though.
Okay, this is going to kind of change the subject, but it's going to circle back. The reason that people say college is the best time of your life is because you live with you basically are like living with all of your friends.
Yes, correct.
So the move here is buy one of these, like you and your friends buy these houses next to each other. And then you have the full backyard, and it's just a hang sesh all
Luke,
the time.
Luke,
we're grilling, we're playing soccer, all of it.
Luke, you do understand you're describing a retirement community, right? Which I have
Let's
maintained.
Let's do that before I get too old.
I have maintained since I was in college that is just the natural progression, is that the ones, this is going to get grim for a second, but bear with me, the ones that make it to retirement, you all need to just buy property in like a big retirement community and hang out all the time.
Yeah.
Because that's what you spend the next 40 years. You go to college and then you spend 40 years laboring so you don't have to labor anymore. And then you can like hang out with your friends again. The ones that make it, I mean.
That is bleak. This is the point, though. Let's bring that to our 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's do that. If you see, like, in the abstract, it seems so doable.
Gotta find remote work.
But it's not for some reason.
Gotta find remote work.
Yeah.
Or just start a company with all your friends.
Yeah. Or, like, make friends.
No, come on. Not anymore. Can't do it.
New friends. My slots are filled, honestly. Yeah,
I'm booked.
Okay, that's the ideal yard, though, I think. No, yeah. Front yard, shared backyard with
huge
10 of your best friends.
Shared backyard, yeah. It's like a circling the wagons. Actually, oh, Luke, you know what we just recreated? We just recreated a courtyard. You realize that, right?
Damn it! Courtyards, clearly the best system.
I blame you. You took us here.
This is like, what is it? Crabs, where evolution just always comes back to crabs.
Correct. Yeah.
Ideal homes just come back to the courtyard system for us. Yeah. Okay, I think that's probably a good place to leave it, though.
Speaking of homes, Luke, can we talk about owning property in The Black Tongue Thief, specifically goblins?
Okay. Yeah. That's our transition.
Is that
we're
transition?
In the book now, folks.
Okay, we finished the book.
We have finished the book.
Luke, you know we have to talk about this goblin quarter, right?
Sure.
Is there anything you want to talk about before that? Because this is going to be an extended discussion.
I do have something before this, actually.
Okay. Let's start with your thing, and then we need to have a discussion about goblins.
The only thing I have before this is when we meet up with Galva's swordmaster.
Oh, yeah.
And so what happens is she does a couple things, displays her character in a couple ways, and then Kinch is like, basically says that he really likes her.
Mm-hmm.
And like, this is a very common thing where like a middle-aged or older woman does something that is like spunky.
Yeah.
And it's like, she's cool. I am starting to have a qualm with these.
With this trope?
Because like, I understand the concept of different people can get away with, like, if one person from one demographic group does something, it might be bad, but if another person does the same thing from a different demographic group, it's good. Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with the concept.
Mm.
However,
mm-hmm.
The things that happen in this case are... She punches Galva in the mouth.
Yes.
As a greeting.
Mm-hmm.
And then she forces her used tobacco cigarette into Kinch's mouth and then says that if he coughs, he like doesn't have any balls.
Yeah.
And then Kinch is like, I like her. She's cool. Counterpoint. No, that fucking sucks. All right. This person is terrible. Imagine a frat bro doing
hell
this.
Yeah.
And you're like, kill him now. I don't want it. I don't like it. I don't like it even if she's 80, okay?
Ah. I don't know. I think it worked for me. I liked it.
You did, okay.
I liked it, okay. Because it was a middle-aged woman doing it. But you're right.
I knew this was going to get somebody.
If this is the guy from the last book, the frat guy from the last book, I'm like, this is like perfect for him. Like, I feel like this is a thing he would do.
Okay.
The Turner guy, right?
What book did we read last?
The Ninth House. Ninth House.
Yeah.
Luke.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. It's not Turner. It's not Brock Turner, man.
It's Brock something, right?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Anyway. Yes. So I loved it. Now, okay. I do get this as a trope, and I do get it's used pretty heavily. I don't care. I don't care. I like it. But I do think it feels too quick to give judgment on a person.
Okay.
Maybe I'm just jaded and cynical about the world, but it feels like if somebody acts like this in the first 5 minutes, I'm like, okay, maybe they're cool. They're certainly unique.
And what you're saying is that what they have demonstrated so far is cool. To be clear.
Yeah, I would think it's kind of cool. Yeah.
Okay.
I'd be like, oh, this person, because it says something, right? It says this person doesn't put up with, or like gets away with a lot of stuff. And so they must have a reason for getting away with a lot of stuff. And that reason must be like, we know they're not rich. I think, okay, Luke, here is the difference. Here is the difference. it's clear that this person isn't rich. If this is a rich person doing this, it's bad. It feels bad.
Okay.
But the fact that it's a person who's not in a position of power already can get away with this means that there's got to be something going on with them that allows them to get away.
No, it's because she's an old lady. Like, okay, she's not an old lady, but like the trope is old lady stuff. And it's like, all right, I'm not going to like yell at this lady.
I guess. Yeah. Okay. She's not that old, is she?
No, she's not. But like,
Does she know Galva is nobility at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
I think so.
I feel like that adds to it. The fact that like this is it, I don't think she is noble, right?
No, I don't think so.
So the fact that she kind of like gets away with punching one of the most important people in Ispantha, I feel like that's cool. I'd be like, oh, damn, she's kind of cool.
This is so funny because I would go up and be like, oh wow, she probably was a pretty bad mentor.
What about Galva's like
she probably was a really good teacher at teaching you, but was a real jerk to you, I bet.
I don't know, Luke. I don't know. She seems cool.
I love it. Oh man, I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to. I agree with you that it displays like she's not boring.
Yeah.
Which is a distinct thing from being cool.
Right. It's sort of, does this give you a little bit of like Syrio vibes from Game of Thrones?
Ooh. The guy that trained
Arya? Yeah.
Well, he was nice though.
That's true. He was really nice. Yeah. But I feel like the Swordmaster has this very, like, has this place where they can sort of,
I think what you're saying is also true of, like, coaches, kind of, generally.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Swordmaster is kind of an extreme version of that.
I feel like, and maybe we're just waiting for this story to be written about a Swordmaster that's more of like an uncool coach. But I feel like Swordmasters occupy a cooler position than just a coach.
Okay.
Coach feels like a little bit of a
dork. Swords are cool?
Yeah, I think it's because swords are really rad. Oh, no. And here's, okay, Luke, because here's the difference. Here's the key difference about a Swordmaster and a coach.
Okay.
A coach is never going to be put in a situation where they're like, coach, we need you to run the leg on this 400 meter. Because a coach is never going to be able to do it. They are not able to do it anymore. They are past their prime. They're not even going to be as good as like the worst athlete that's out there competing in that moment.
Okay.
The Swordmaster, though, there's almost always a moment where they're like, hey, we got to get you. You got to fight with us because we're in the shit right now. And the Swordmaster's like, oh, watch this shit.
This is true. The Swordmaster usually is still better than the pupil.
Or like at least comparable. Like at least they're like really, really good. And yeah, you know what I mean? I feel like that's the difference with a coach and a Swordmaster is a Swordmaster can still rock shit.
Okay. I love this of us being like, obviously swords are cooler than sports, folks.
I think this is self-evident, Luke. We hold these truths to be self-evident.
Yes, very true. As a podcast about fantasy books, we do.
Yeah. Can we talk about the Goblin Quarter now, Luke?
I'm ready to go to goblins.
What the fuck? How does this work? How does this Goblin Quarter work, Luke? Because they're claiming that there's like money to be made.
Mm-hmm.
How does the goblins living in that quarter, like what economic opportunities are present if you like live in the city versus just bring goods in and trade into the city?
Right. Like, because the idea of wealth being generated by like two civilizations coming together is trade.
Yeah, correct.
And you don't need to be like literally living together. You just need to be in contact for this. And presumably you're bringing stuff from a different place.
Correct. They're correct. Like people could just live there and use the resources if there are any special resources in that place. Like, right. Unless you're like, oh, the goblins have a lot of money, so we can sell part of this property to them as a real estate investment.
Right, but that doesn't make any sense, because why would they have the same money?
It doesn't make any sense at all, especially considering the goblin place looks like shit. Like, the goblin place does not look nice. And the only reasons I can think of for why you would need the goblins to actually live there is if there's like amazing goblin food that they're serving up. That you like have to go to a goblin restaurant. But it immediately gets thrown out the window when they talk about the chain rule.
Right. I think the only... Let's get to the chain rule in a second.
Yeah.
But I think the only logical explanation for it... Well, actually, there's two. One is just like, this helps facilitate trade better than... Like, it just somehow makes trade more smooth. I don't know.
Sure.
The other is that like... Goblins have unique skills and abilities.
Which they do
that will like, but this would be like, the food is one example.
Mm-hmm.
Like design, artwork.
Mm.
I don't know. Furniture crafting.
Sorry, Luke. You're describing things that cannot be shipped? Is that what you're trying to do right now?
Damn it. I don't know.
I get if you're trying to hire a goblin architect for your manor, it's a lot easier if they live just across the chain.
Right.
But, okay, there's one more thing before we get to the chain. Because the chain we need to talk about. Because I think it throws a wrench into this entire idea that they could have, like, restaurants or something that they're... Yeah. That we're going to.
There's another wrench in the restaurant idea also, yeah. Which is that the goblins eat like people.
Well, yeah. Also, they salt their food way too much, which we've already talked about. Yeah. Luke, there's another buff for goblins that may have slipped us by. Did you catch this other buff for goblins?
No, I don't know.
Goblins? The Goblin Quarter is dark. There's no torches in the Goblin Quarter. Do you know why, Luke?
Mm-hmm. I now recall, because they can see pretty well in the dark.
Goblins have dark vision. Okay, drink seawater. Dark vision, special little hook thing, which seems valuable. I get that they're small.
Yeah.
They also have magic. They seem to not be run by the guild, which we don't know.
Right.
Jury's still out on that. Goblins feel too good. I feel like I would not want the goblins that close to me because I'd be like, they're so much better than us.
Right.
They're going to conquer our city in like a day. We need candles. All they have to do is cut off our tallow input, our imports. The city falls into darkness and then it's Goblin City.
That's true. That's so true. It's a risk for sure.
Goblins seeing in the dark is too much. It's unfair. I get that they live underground in these like warrens.
Yeah.
And so they like it's natural for their evolution. And I also get that they're afraid of birds. Being afraid of birds is not a big enough nerf.
I know.
Anyway.
The them living right next to each other and sometimes together, considering they're like, it's like a little Cold War kind of situation going on.
Right. Kind of. Especially because they are like violent to each other all the time. Like,
yeah,
there is acknowledged violence between them. It just can't escalate to like a state level. It has to stay like individuals fighting rather than like two states that now have to fight each other. And so the fact that they're like, yeah, we will sell you property is ridiculous to me.
Right. And it's not like, it's not like a lot of the problems that we have in our world where like two or multiple groups of people were already sharing a space and like lines got carved up.
Correct.
This one is like, they're like, okay, no, it would actually benefit us in some specific ways if we lived in close proximity.
Right, to these creatures that eat people.
Yes. I want to see the numbers. I want to see the economic numbers.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they're taxed really highly? But then how do you collect those taxes? Because the laws don't apply. The horde laws apply to them.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. Your laws don't even apply to them? Then why are they living in your city? Why did you let them in? Was this also part of the deal? Why would they want to live there?
Consider the idea that like a big part of the war was like the release, as we talked about, of like bioweapons, basically.
Yeah.
No, get out. I'm sorry. We're still at war. We're basically still at war.
And until you bring horses back or make donkeys cooler, you're out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a bad time to Luke, be
had. We need to talk about the chain.
Yep.
So there's this rule that we learned about where you can't, like, there's a chain that separates the goblin half from the people half. And if somebody reaches over the chain, it's like fair game to attack them.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is,
actually, no, because it has to be, they have to be fully over the chain, I think.
Right. They have to be over the chain, fully over the chain to attack them, sure. But you can grab, you can't, well, you're like not supposed to reach over the chain though, right?
Yes. This is why you're getting to the pull game, right?
Right, because then you create a pull game because both sides have agreed they want to kill each other.
Yes.
So much that this happens with somewhat regularity. The goblins or the people will tempt one side into reaching over. And then they will attempt to kill whoever does the reaching.
Well, they will attempt to pull them over.
Okay, with the intention
so that they can kill them once they're over.
Correct.
Yeah, and then you get a little tug of war game going on.
No, guys. This is horrific. This happens one time and I'm like, we need to do something about this. Where's the mayor? Get the mayor on this.
I know. Especially our main character kind of goes on to it at the end. It's a very ignoble way to die.
It was brutal. Yeah. I mean,
very brutal for our guy, Malk.
Malk.
Great name.
Mm-hmm.
To survive two goblin wars and then die this way, as Kinch says.
Well,
terrible.
And the thing about this, which it feels a little bit unfair, you could warn people about this, right? Like, you could put up a sign that's like, hey, they're going to try and pull you over. Don't do it.
Yeah.
I don't know if Malk would have heeded it, but I imagine the calculus changes if Malk knows what is going to happen if he tries to pull that goblin.
I couldn't quite tell, because it almost seemed like he did know.
You think he was just too, like, bold to think that he would get pulled over? You might be right.
That's the sense that I got, at least.
I feel like, Luke, do you feel like people who respond to insults in this way are like kind of dumb.
Yes, absolutely.
I feel like if you respond to an insult that's clearly trying to get you to do something, you're kind of dumb, because like I think for twofold. The first is, if they're insulting you, they probably have a good reason for doing it. Like, they're probably trying to get you to do something that they think they could win.
Right. I mean, this goes back to what I said last time about the, yes, about the challenge
stuff. Exactly. And the other thing is, the other reason I think you're kind of dumb, if you take the bait, is because the bait is verbal, usually. It's coming up with something clever to say.
Yeah.
If you can't come up with something clever to say, and the cleverest thing you can do is, like, violence against them, you lose. You're, like, not smart. You're like, well, I guess I can use my fists, but I can't think of anything better to say to you. You lose the rap battle as soon as you throw bows.
Right.
And I think you're kind of dumb to lose the rap battle in that way. Like, you're acknowledging the superior aura of your opponent.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a particularly bad example of it, because they're walking along the chain,
mm-hmm,
and this goblin starts talking trash to him.
Yeah.
And they're all like, hey, let's go to the other side of the street, because, like, this would, like, we don't need to talk trash to the goblin.
Right.
And then so, like, half of them go, and the other half is like, yeah, Mok, like, this is stupid, let's go.
Yeah.
And he's just like, no, I really need to insult this boy. Why? Yeah. Why do you need to?
Mm.
This isn't even a case of like proving your courage or anything, right, like that.
Right.
Because everyone is like, yeah, dude, it'd be stupid if you stayed and hung out with this. You're hanging out with the goblin at this point. Like, you guys are now basically just like, not friends, obviously, but like, you guys are vibing together.
Right.
You're both vibing off of each other to the point of killing each other.
Correct. Yes.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. Stop it, Malk.
Go get a drink. Go to a good restaurant, not a goblin one.
The goblin ones, you can't trust them.
Am I the only one that, like, is kind of, well, okay. So again, the rules are, once someone is fully over the chain,
mm-hmm,
you can do whatever you want with them.
Yeah.
There's not, like, video camera. We're not doing, like, action replays. Right? Like, and, well, it's just a chain.
It is just a
chain. I mean,
chain.
I realize that, like, there's a bunch of people in this moment, and you break the rule, maybe, like, you actually start a full-on brawl kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, like, this just can't happen. We just can't do this. I'm sorry. A chain? One chain?
I mean,
give me a fence at least.
No, but then they can't play the cool game.
Okay, sure. True. Yeah.
It also, Luke, because there's no rules when you cross the chain, like, there's nothing to stop people from just arming themselves and, like, crossing the chain, being like, yeah, we're not part of any government or anything, we just want to kill a bunch of goblins, or, mm-hmm, vice versa. Mm-hmm. Because if the rules don't apply to you and you've crossed the chain, you can do whatever you want.
This is a good point.
Like, start a little chain tug-of-war thing, but then just, like, pull all of your buddies over with you and just start, like, looting and killing.
Right.
And then make your way back when you're done. Like, prepare for the violence. Do you know what I mean?
Like, intentionally be pulled over, you mean.
Right, like, the bait, they think they're baiting you into pulling them over. Oh, no, 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 no. I've got 30 buddies that are going to be a part of this chain, and we're all going to jump over at the same, right, time when
you
pull us.
You were much stronger and pulled 30 of us over, actually.
Correct. And now fight us all, friends.
Right.
It's like you asked, you bit off a little more than you could chew, gobbies.
Right. Right. I'm not stuck in here with you. You're stuck in here with me.
Ooh, you're stuck in here with me. Yes, 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 Luke. The chain rule doesn't work. For calculus, it works. But for this, it does not work.
I was trying to remember where I was getting the chain rule from.
Yeah.
But yeah,
you got multiple functions anyway. Regardless,
it's not a good setup.
No,
you don't want to live next to the you don't want to live next to the chain.
Oh. Let's leave this horrible place behind, Luke.
Terrible place. Let's go to Fulvier.
Yes.
The magician guy.
The horrible wizard.
The horrible wizard that makes all the abominations.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to feel about them, but I will say his conversation with Kinch was very fun to me.
Where he's just, you can't tell if he's being true or not?
Yes, just like kind of everything involved with this was very chaotic and entertaining to read.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I will say, frustrating to have a conversation in this society where it's like, are you lying or what's the deal?
It feels like no communication could actually happen, because it feels like you can never, like, you always have an out. You can always be like, no, I was joking. You just didn't get it. If people call you on something, and it's like, you can't do that. We can't have a society if you can always just be like, I didn't mean what I just said because I was doing the lying thing.
Or like, when I say something that you can't do, I'm actually telling you that I want you to do that.
Correct.
It's you cannot build a society off of this method of communication.
No.
But it is kind of funny to read.
It's very funny to read. It's very good. Do you think he's his dad? Over/under on him being his dad.
This is not how over/unders work.
Yeah, I know.
But I mean, there is an implication that his dad is someone important. A couple times in this book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of skeptical of it being him, just because, like, I don't know. It seems like a joke that this guy would play on him.
Does seem like a pretty good joke. Yeah.
And he's also like, how did he know what color hair my mom has? It's like, I don't know, man. No one knows how magic in this world works, okay?
Well, but also, Luke, if I'm trying to guess the attributes of your parents, pretty easy to have a good idea of what they could be.
Right. Because Kinch's hair is kind of reddish.
Yeah.
And I think he says his mom's hair is copper or something.
Correct. So, like, he could just be totally bluffing here, because he knows a little bit about how, like,
he figured out how genetics work.
Yeah.
Yeah, could be. He is very good at genetics. As
some would say, too good.
That's his whole thing.
Way too good at genetics. Okay. So this whole thing starts, Luke. I want to talk about how Kinch gets into the wizard's house.
Yeah.
They're like on the way to the wizard hut, and Kinch sees just like a gold coin on the side of the road. Kinch knows that they're on the way to the wizard hut. Mm-hmm. As soon as he picks up the coin, he's like, oh shit, what's going on? Guys, hello.
Right.
That feels like day one of thief school. Of like, look, if you're on the way to the wizard hut, don't pick up anything shiny. Do not leave the path. They're going to try and trick you. Don't do it. Because it feels so obvious to me. It's like, you see a shiny thing on the way to a wizard hut. It's a spider cave or something. Like, has he not read The Hobbit?
I don't think he has.
They're gonna tempt you. Wizards love to tempt you with weird shit.
You gotta know this. You got to. And that's his weakness. You know what? You gotta know your weaknesses too.
It wasn't even an owlet, Luke.
It wasn't even an owlet.
I don't think, at least. I could be wrong.
I don't remember it either. You got to be more suspicious as a trained thief.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're right.
Can I tell you?
I mean, they are kind of invited, though.
I mean, yes, they seem to be. However, this leads me to rule number two that I feel like they should have learned.
Okay.
Okay, rule number one, no picking up anything shiny.
Never.
Rule number two, never sneaking around the wizard's house at night.
Yeah, you but this, again, was he inviting him to, Dan?
No, Luke, you open a door and like a fireball hits you, or you open a door and it's a dragon that he's yes. like taught to blast people with fireballs, or you open a door and it's like a weird bear creature that wants to eat you. You right. can't, you don't know what's behind the doors because it's magic, and it's such high levels of magic.
You're right. You know what? You're absolutely right. This is why you can't worship the god of mischief.
It's true. You're going to get... Especially if he may or may not exist.
Yeah, that especially then. Because it's like, you know what? Mischief is fun in theory, but like, I don't always want to be... Sometimes I want to play it safe.
Right. Maybe I don't want to end up turned into a little fox guy because I opened the wrong door in the wizard hut and I entered mm-hmm. like a... hibernation dream sleep for the next month while he messed around with my DNA.
Right. Not a desirable outcome for me. Just like best behavior in the really powerful wizard.
Yeah. Especially places. If you want him to give you a book or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and but this is okay, but again, this is the thing. Like, to some degree, I thought and I think Kinch thought as well that like him doing little shenanigans was potentially what the wizard wanted and would impress the wizard.
Okay,
but it's like the risk is too high.
And the problem, Luke, is knowing where the line is. This is the same problem we have with the fourth wing. If you let all the kids go buck wild in the yeah. fortress and you say do whatever the fuck you want, when they actually do some shit that fucks things up, you're like, oh, I should have put some guidelines on this. That was my bait.
Right. Right.
And there's no guidelines. He's like a... He almost did get blasted, by the way.
Yes.
So, like, was that the goal? Was he testing dead legs? Was that the thing? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because dead legs had to earn... Noragal, which we later learn is dead legs, kind of. We're going to get into that. Noragal, like, saves him from being blasted.
Yes, in some way that I didn't fully understand.
Right. Like a time travel thing or something. I don't know.
You can't mess around in this. Okay, are you ready to leave the wizard's place?
Please, let's get out of here.
I want to go to the city that the giants have destroyed, basically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Down into the sewers.
Mm-hmm.
And in our little interaction with, I forget what this guy is. I think he like was a thief master or something like that.
Oh, like the upright man, the one that's not yeah. part of the guild. Yeah.
Yeah. My first note is that I was actually kind of into this card game. I thought it seemed kind of fun, even Towers. Though we didn't fully know the rules.
Yeah.
But afterwards,
mm-hmm.
it is implied that Kinch does do the little frick frack snick snack with our guy to get the information.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And so my question is, did he just want to play cards?
Yeah, I think so.
Because like earlier the guy's like, yeah, if we get intimate, I will tell you.
Yes.
And Kinch is like, alternative proposal, I'll play you for it. Yeah. And then Kinch wins and it still happens.
Well, yes. Because there is no, I don't think there is any winning.
So I think that Kinch was just like, I want to get some cards in real quick before we do this thing.
Well, and maybe Kinch didn't really think it all the way through. Because
mm-hmm.
as soon as he wins, he's like, uh-oh, wait a minute.
Right.
I don't know how this is going to go.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. I guess it's just a slot. I think, actually, no, let me back up. I think that this is just, the author was like, I've been thinking up this cool card game that I want the readers to know about.
I think it was more than that, though. I loved how that scene was described, though. And I think it only works because we have of the narration perspective that we have. Because, like, I think Kinch got to... Kinch did not have to say anything about what happened behind the door in reality.
Mm-hmm.
Kinch could make up a different scene that happened, learned information, and then at the very end was like, oh yeah, none of that actually happened, and I just was like wanting to tell you a story because what actually happened I didn't really want to talk about.
Ooh, okay.
And so I kind of love it as a storytelling. Like, the only way that the narration could have worked that way is if there was any possibility that it didn't happen and that Kinch could kind of get you into this story of what he's saying happened.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
so are you thinking that they didn't actually play cards?
Oh, that would be... No, I think there's a possibility because all of this is from Kinch's perspective and he's clearly been an a not reliable narrator so far.
Right.
I think that they probably did. What I'm saying is from the author's perspective, in order to write it in this cool way where Kinch gets to make up a story about what happened to conceal the sort of unsavory thing that actually happened, you have to believe it would actually go down that way.
Okay.
And the only way you would believe that is if he won the first game and this thief guy was actually somewhat honorable.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I think so. Yeah.
So I kind of like... I don't think the author just wanted to tell a... I mean, the author definitely did want to talk about this card game he had been thinking of.
Yeah.
But I think there was another reason.
Okay. Okay. I'm kind of... I kind of now like... I know this wasn't what you were saying, but I now kind of like the idea... of them not even playing cards and Kinch just being like, yeah, I just went for the deal originally, but I'm making up this story about us playing cards for it.
Yeah.
That's now truth to me.
And this is the trouble with books with unreliable narrators is like how much of any of these stories could be true.
Right.
Especially because Kinch loves a story. Kinch loves like a ballad. You know?
Yeah, but this is the only one where it's like I understand the idea that any of these stories could not be true, but this is the only one where it's hinted at. So I'm not gonna waste time thinking about like, oh, maybe this previous thing didn't actually happen.
I guess that's fair. And he did do some unsavory things that we heard about. So
yeah.
Anyway, good stuff. I love that scene. I thought that was brilliant. Had a good time.
Me too. Kinch kind of crushes it in this, by the way. They send him alone to be like, figure out, go into this city with giants that's been destroyed and figure out where the princess or the queen went.
Yeah.
And he does it successfully, pretty quickly, too.
And they didn't even need the map.
Yeah.
Because they didn't even go to the like main city.
Wait, no, they did go to the... He uses the map in the sewers, right?
No, I don't think so.
I think this is the main city.
I thought that they hadn't reached the main city yet. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think this is it. I mean, I like, even if it is, they don't really use, he doesn't really use the map in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
Anyway. But
regardless. Okay. So we find the princess.
Yeah. The queen. Queen now.
Sorry. Queen. Yes, queen. How do we feel about the giants after meeting a few of them?
I don't know how to feel about them. Mm. I guess I just don't have a strong opinion on them.
I mean, I'll say on the one side, using a bunch of people is like hunting dogs feels a little bit weird as a person. Okay.
Yes.
On the other hand, they're like truth-telling ritual, kind of badass.
the death story thing.
Yeah, where they're like, I have to tell you the truth. And I think it's an amazing counter. There's a couple of things for it which are really interesting. The parallelism with like the tongues and like having a golden tongue versus a black tongue, really interesting with Kinch. But also just like Kinch, this person who's been making up so much of this story, well, potentially, as we've just talked about, and it has like zero qualms lying to anybody. And the giant being like, I have to tell you the truth. And you know it's the truth because I like, my God will punish me if it's not.
Yeah.
I love that scene.
Yeah, I liked it a lot too. I do think that the giants as a whole seem to be... I mean, like, are they just people that are just bigger? Because, like this person, seems pretty good and pretty, like, normal, honestly. Yeah. Other than just being big.
Yeah. I mean, okay, they've got to be nerfed a little bit, right? Because if we're thinking about goblins having the most buffs because they're little, humans being neutral, what's the problem that giants have?
I assume it's just numbers. Giants? Don't you think? Oh, they don't have magic, do they?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't think we saw any magic by them, at least.
No, we just saw magic done to them. And we do have to shout out Torridon from the Discord here. There's a scene where the giants are fighting and the musicians are like doing magic on them to slow them down. And one of the giants, there's a Kinch at one point is like recognizing the frustration on one of the giants' faces as they can't move. And he's just like, yeah, the thing about magic is it's so unfair. It like sucks to fight somebody who's using magic.
If you don't have magic, it sucks.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Maybe they don't have magic. Although they've got a lot of like tattoos and that would be a good nerf. If they didn't have magic. That's true.
Yeah.
I was going to say maybe they can't eat spicy food.
Huge nerf. Huge nerf.
Allergic to gluten, maybe?
Yeah, because they... I don't know. They kind of come in and wreck it pretty easily. This last bit where they have made it into this cave...
Yeah.
And they have basically a fight with the assassin who is on Kinch. This fight and the things that happen afterward made me even more kind of into this magic system than I previously was, actually. And what I mean by magic system is like very loose, because it's not a hard magic system like we're used to from like Brandon Sanderson or something where like there are well-defined rules. Just like crazy things happen. And I kind of like it the way that it's done.
Yes.
Because it's like you have no idea what is coming, what could be done next. Like the examples are... the assassin has a bunch of tattoos that let her do little, like, small tricks. Mm-hmm. So the examples being she can turn her arms into, like, basically metal.
Yeah.
And she has, like, an up tattoo, which lets her jump really high, I guess. She's got a double jump. She's got a double jump. But she also has, like, a turn back time.
Yeah.
That kind of also makes your opponents forget a little bit. Mm-hmm. That's cool. What's going on with that?
Yes.
And then next, I'm going to jump to the big one.
Yeah.
Which you already referenced about Noragal.
Yeah.
Being Deadlegs in the past / future. That was cool. I don't know what it means. And I love that Kinch at one point is like, I'll have to think about this later.
Yeah.
Because it is like, what are you talking about? How did this happen?
Luke, I need to freak your bean a little bit more, because I don't know if this is wrong. Is Noragal her own mom?
So,
and is Kinch her dad slash lover? Because,
ooh,
because here's my evidence that I will put forth for this. Okay, we get the sense that there's like a never ending chain of like an old one and a young one, right?
Yeah,
and they're all the same sort of person. It's like this time loop that's being created. Yeah. At one point, Kinch and Noragal have relations that could potentially result in a baby. And I want to introduce a new trope. We already talked about it. They're not dead if you don't see a body. The new trope we're going to say is if they have sex, there always could be a baby.
Okay.
Especially if the words are like, oh, I can take something for that, so it doesn't make a baby.
Right, but that we don't actually see them do that.
Correct.
That's interesting.
I think we're in baby territory. And Luke, there's another key part here. After this happens, Noragal is like exhausted as they're traveling. Yeah. Any symptoms you see from a woman who could be pregnant are an indication that they're pregnant.
Well, okay. Okay. This one though, it gets confusing because it's like, this is not the same person. Kind of.
No. Noragal.
Oh, you mean before they do the swap?
Sorry. Yes. Before they get to the wizard's hut, Noragal she's described as like so sleepy that like Kinch is like trying to wake her up on her horse.
Yeah.
And then because that's why she then starts taking the like drug to keep her awake that makes her really annoying.
Oh. Yes. Now I know what you're talking about. You shouldn't be taking this cocaine, by the way.
Especially not if you're pregnant, Noragal. Which we've established she is.
Right, confirmed, absolutely.
It feels like a weird baby time loop, though. You know what I mean? Which feels weird? I don't know. I guess it's not wrong because it's... But it feels weird. I don't know. This whole thing... Kinch is going to have to think about this for a while.
Yeah. We all are, honestly.
It's true. So anyway, the theory is Noragal is her own mom and Kinch is her dad slash lover, which is... It's sort of a Terminator situation.
I'm into it.
I don't know if I want to say that. I don't know if I want to commit to that.
I like the time loop thing. I'm not committing to the being your own mom thing.
Okay, yeah. The time loop thing is cool. Definitely.
And more generally, back to the original point, just the crazy magic stuff where you don't know what's going next. It seems like people are just doing research. We got research labs being like, what crazy magic tattoo can I come up with?
Right. It's almost like they just need to figure out the words to spell out and they can make the magic happen.
Right.
So
everything needs goat's blood, basically.
A step up from goat's milk.
I was just going to bring up the goat's milk. The most powerful animal, by the way. Confirmed. Goats.
Confirmed. Absolutely confirmed. Okay, Luke. There's another question that I have as we wrap up here.
Mm-hmm.
The guild, to me, feels too incompetent to be in control of this much. Here's what I mean. Okay, part one is it seems like the guild might be implicated in killing all the horses. Feels like such a huge gamble when you're losing a war with goblins to be like, let's also kill all the horses so that when this war ends, we're in charge.
Right.
You don't know how it's going to end, guys.
Right. I will say, Kinch kind of throws out this accusation.
True.
And I feel like there's a decent chance it's like, this was not correct.
Fair. The second thing, though, is this system of debt collection. So we learn what a rose is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what a rose is? A rose means that the guild turns you into a prostitute.
Yes.
Sorry. You're going to take a person who you've trained to have a very specific skill set of thievery and say, no, you're not going to pay us back with that. You're going to do this other thing that we have not trained you to do to pay us back.
Right.
Incompetence. Complete incompetence.
It's a weird trajectory because it's like, is that more lucrative?
Right. And if so, why are you training thieves?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
It does not make sense. Don't do this. Does it mean that, like, okay, because there's levels to this too. Does it mean if I'm in the tavern and I see somebody with a rose, they have to come sleep with me? And if I, and I like would pay the guild for it? Or like, what? Does the guild pay me? Like the slap?
Tough to say.
It's just seems like it's kind of a mess. It's a waste.
And I will say, so Kinch at one point talks about how only really smart people can be in charge of the guild.
Yes, it's a little bit like a technocracy.
Because they have to build up through this system, and then they're even hit with learning the murder alphabet.
Yes.
At the very end. And like, none of these things are like economics skill sets that you're learning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people can pass all of these hurdles and still be dumb in a specific way, right? Like, oh, this, like, you can be really good at languages.
Yeah.
And reading and learning, yeah, languages.
Uh-huh.
And not be suited for leadership of a, like, incredibly powerful organization.
Right. But, Luke, have you thought about the fact that they're the only ones that can read the murder alphabet?
This is a good point. This is a good point. The other thing that I feel like he's not accounting for is that, like, you have to be super ambitious.
Yes.
To get to this level.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like people that are super ambitious and also operate in a no morals environment,
mm-hmm,
might have their own best interests at heart.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I would be surprised if the guild is not, like, constantly fracturing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but, I mean, it's probably because there's one biggest, smartest guy at the very top.
I guess. But also, like, the guild is only... the guild has only been super powerful for, like, a few decades, I guess. Which is a long time, but not, like, crazy long.
Right. Right. Maybe, I mean, they're just getting started. This is a startup, Luke.
Okay.
This is Facebook before it was Facebook.
Good.
We all saw how that ended up, so.
We love both of these organizations.
Right. Right. Okay, Luke, should we get to reviews?
Yeah. Yeah.
Short reviews. Short reviews. I'll go first. I'll get us started. Luke, I had a great time with this book.
Mm-hmm.
Super fun. The dialogue was great. This honestly brings me back to sort of the vibe from the Lies of Locke Lamora. Like, the things that I really liked about the Lies of Locke Lamora, this was hitting for me. Mm-hmm. This is like one of my top books I think we've read.
Ooh.
In a while. This is getting up there. Okay. This is we're reviving the top five. This is going to my top five.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah, I had a great time. I was like always excited to pick this up to get back to it.
Yeah, yeah. I largely agree. This one was kind of interesting because, like, I think it was really well written. I really enjoyed reading it. And I really, I like don't have anything specific to say negatively about it. I think that it's not like a book that I was like, that was very difficult to put down.
Mm-hmm.
and this is going to be a weird thing to say, but I'm not saying that as in like a bad thing necessarily. Mm-hmm. Because again, I think the strength of this book is just in the like way, I don't know, like writing style, just like the way that it reads kind of, mm-hmm. and less so in the like plot line.
Mm. Yeah, totally.
Again, not to say that the plot line is bad, but like it was something that I could put down and pick up pretty easily and have a good time basically every time I picked it up.
Totally agree. The plot didn't care that much about. Was way yeah. more interested in the wacky situations that our characters got into and how they were going to sort of talk about it and yeah. get through it. Yeah.
I think I can see a lot of influences of Lies of Locke Lamora, like you said, and also I feel like I see a lot of influences from The Blade itself, or the Joe Abercrombie books.
Sure, sure.
Of yeah. the kind of like darkness,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but more in a funny way,
right?
Which I think is the Locke Lamora stuff coming in.
Yeah, definitely.
I had a good time. I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Likewise, Luke. Likewise. What's next for us, Luke?
Okay, so let's look far in advance for a moment, because mm-hmm. Luke and Dan have some traveling to do.
Classic summer travel.
So we are going to take actually kind of a long time off, just because there's really not going to be a time for us to record for most of June, I think. So we will have an episode out next week, and then we'll be taking a few weeks off. So next week is going to be a one-off.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, we're thinking about checking out this new show called Murderbot.
Murderbot, yes, from Martha Wells. We've read some of those stories.
Yes.
Always a good time. I think every time we left a Murderbot story, it was a good time. Mm-hmm. And apparently the show is great. We've heard good things about the show. There are, I think, at the release of this, there will be 3 episodes of the show out.
Mm-hmm.
We might watch the first 3. What do you think, Luke? First 3?
I think let's aim for first 3.
Yeah.
For next episode. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So check that out. If you don't have Apple TV, maybe they have a free trial or something. That's probably what I'm going to end up doing. So we'll see. And then, yeah, we're going to be gone for a good chunk of June. So we'll be coming back kind of end of June, early July time. Catch up on some reading you haven't done yet. Read some more of the Murderbot stuff. Those are always fun. Yeah. So we'll see you next week. We'll bring the hot takes.
And be the dumb nerds.